I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans, America's premier home purchase lender. We've created a new way to protect you from unpredictable interest rates. Our exclusive Rate Shield approval. First, we lock your interest rate for up to 90 days. Then, if rates go up, your rate stays locked. But if rates go down, your rate drops. Either way, you win. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year fixed rate loans. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply.
Good morning, class. I'm Tony Spears, and you're listening to Binary Gamer, where we're going to learn a little something about video games. So, real quick, let's take care of business, and then we will get into the lesson for today, which I think you're all going to like very much. So, Binary Gamer is a podcast hosted by myself, but also hosted on homeofnerds.com. What is homeofnerds.com, you ask? Home of Nerds is your one-stop shop for everything, news, reviews, tips and tricks, anything you want to know slash learn about video games, it's all right there. You can also check out our stuff over on youtube.com/homeofnerds. You can check out our streams over on Twitch at twitch.tv/homeofnerds. And of course, you can reach Home of Nerds on Twitter and all the social media. It's everywhere. Go check it out. And if you have any questions, comments, concerns, complaints, anything you want to throw my way, maybe a question you want read on the show, just send your email to the email address podcast@homeofnerds.com. All right, so before we get into the subject, one last bit of news. So, as I'm sure you all heard from last week, this year, Home of Nerds is going to be doing our very own Extra Life stream now. When you're listening to this, technically Extra Life proper will be over. That's fine. In the spirit of Extra Life, you can do a Extra Life stream anytime that you want. But, of course, everything has to go for the different Children's Miracle Network hospitals. And, obviously, it all goes to the same charities. All goes to the same great cause, right? That's what we're here for. We're here for a great cause. Well, we are going to still be doing ours this year. We are going to be doing it at the 19th of November, which is 2 weeks away. And we are going to be starting at 8 a.m. sharp Central Standard Time. And then when we get started, we are going hard in the paint for 24 hours. And it's going to be amazing. So if you want to check that out and you want to donate to an awesome cause, go to Extra Life and donate over at extralife.com/homeofnerds, or pardon me, extralife.org, it's a .org, /homeofnerds, and you can go and donate as little as a dollar to our charity that is going to be going to the East Tennessee Children's Hospital here in the great state of Tennessee. So, more on that later. I'll hit it up again at the end of the episode. For now, let's get into this week's subject. What is this week's subject? Well, with the Switch kind of playing the borders of the handheld and console genres, and a serious lack of console competition, I decided we'd go into a little bit of history about consoles. Not consoles, handhelds. Good Lord, it's my own lesson, and I'm already mixing stuff up. Yes, handhelds. Handheld video game consoles is what we're going to be talking about. So, specifically today, we're going to be talking about the Game Boy. Probably going to turn this into a bit of a series, but once we get down the road, we'll start picking up some steam. Probably be talking about some things you're familiar with, and maybe some things that you're not familiar with. Trust me, I've been doing a lot of research over the last week or so, and I have found stuff that I had no idea even existed. It was crazy. Like, some stuff I was like, oh yeah, I know that one. Never seen it in person, but I've heard of it. And then there's ones where I'm like, I didn't even know that was a thing. Alright, so here we go. The Game Boy. So the Game Boy is an 8-bit handheld video game system, right? So essentially, you hold it in your hands. It looks like a kind of like a miniature VHS tape is probably the best way to describe the dimensions. I always liked how they had that little rounded corner off on the end where the speaker was at. You know, kind of gave that a whole like, oh, this is sort of artsy, that type thing. So it was developed and manufactured by Nintendo. So it came out in Japan in 1989, but then in North America came out actually later on that year in July of 89. So Japan got it in April. We got it in July. Europe didn't get it all the way until September of 90. So, you know, a lot of things I've realized doing research and just my general experience and knowledge is that the PAL region usually gets kind of boned when it comes to stuff that that Nintendo releases, which I guess we kind of explain why they're a lot more into Sony than anything else. I mean, if you're going for like ratios, but that's beyond the point. All right, so it was the very first Game Boy handheld, right? So 89 comes around, Japan decides they want to make a handheld console. Well, not Japan, a particular Japanese man by the name of Gunpei Yokoi. So if you recognize the name Gunpei Yokoi, it's because he's actually very pivotal in the early years of Nintendo's development as a company, as one of the leading manufacturers and developers of video games. Gunpei Yokoi is most famous for making the Game & Watch series of games. So as the story goes, Gunpei Yokoi is sitting there on a train one day and sees some guy, probably an accountant of some sort, playing on his LCD wristwatch calculator. And he just suddenly had this idea like, hey, holy crap, what if you could put a legitimate game on a watch and it would be a game and watch? So Game & Watch is a very loose way of putting it, because to be perfectly honest, it was more game than watch. The Game & Watch, I guess we'll call them wearables, had a tiny little LCD display of the actual time, like up in like the top right corner, and that was it. The rest of the screen was just taken up by the, you know, the little LCD environment that you're playing the game in, whether it was a very rough version of Mario Brothers or Donkey Kong. I think they had a race game at some point, but yeah. So again, Gunpei Yokoi comes out with the Game & Watch. Later on is the brain, the big sexy brain behind the Game Boy. So Gunpei Yokoi, along with Nintendo's R&D lab, comes up with it, and essentially they wanted to try and take the power of the Nintendo and put it into a handheld. Now, realistically, if you look at the technology of the time, this isn't a very far shot. This isn't them trying to nail the target at 1,000 meters. It's doable, but it's about scaling the technology. And that's where a lot of handheld development got kind of hamstrung in like the 90s, well, the early to late 90s, only because it was really hard for them to scale the compatible parts into a smaller package. So, all right, for the record, if I sound all stuffed up and everything like that, it's because I just came back from a week in the field, and I think I caught the crud, but I'm not going to stop doing the podcast, obviously, because luckily there's a whole digital frontier between you and me, which means I'm not contagious. Yay. All right, but back to the lesson. So they wanted to be able to put games similar to what was popular on the NES, the Nintendo Entertainment System, onto a handheld so that more people could play games just, you know, wherever they were at, on the go. That's the whole purpose of a handheld, is in order to be able to play games on the go. So while they're going through, there's a lot of different like redesigns of the system as it's coming out, like 96 and 98. You got the Game Boy Pocket and the Game Boy Light. And that's L-I-G-H-T, not L-I-T-E. But the Game Boy Light only came out in Japan, which kind of sucks because it was a legitimate Game Boy that had its own backlight instead of that monstrosity that you bought at like Toys R Us or Target that clipped onto the front and made your Game Boy weigh an additional 8 pounds. So technically the Game Boy is actually their second handheld, now that I think about it, because of the Game & Watch. But I was about to say they're first, but when you actually break it down, it is their second. So yay for Game & Watch, they were the first. So whenever you think of the Game Boy, what's the game you think of first? Go ahead, I'll wait. You got your answer? Because I know your answer. It's Tetris. So Tetris was a huge release for Nintendo. Like, it really solidified the console's like place, the handheld. If I interchange handheld and console, I apologize, but I'm talking about the Game Boy. It's a handheld console. But yes, it really solidified that game's, the console's place in history, because I knew people that owned Game Boys. I knew people's parents that owned Game Boys, and the only game they had was Tetris. Like, it was essentially just their Tetris machine. You know what I mean? And that's a pretty powerful statement, not only for the handheld, but for the game itself. I mean, you can go back now, and you can sit there and think about the great games of all time. Tetris is going to be one of them. Anyway, so now when we're looking at, like, hardware specifications, this thing is not that crazy when you think about it, right? Like, the hardware inside. So this thing has your basic controller layout for a Nintendo system. So you have your D-pad, made most famous by Nintendo. Start, select, A and B. Boom, you're done. Those are your controls. Congratulations. Go save the princess. So this thing also had volume control, which was actually pretty cool at the time, because if you wanted to, you could plug in headphones and then you could get a more stereo effect, which was pretty cool, especially since a lot of games only came through mono on the speaker, because only had one speaker. So then the other thing that the Game Boy had that a lot of people don't realize is that it had this really cool little lockout lever, so that you could keep the game in, so you couldn't like accidentally pull the cart while you're playing the game until you jack it up. Now, granted, I've seen people with, you know, busted Game Boys before, and their lockout lever is like broken off or doesn't work properly, and then like you pull the cart while the game is on, it does not do good things for the cart. Don't do that, kids. Don't abuse your consoles. So, aside from the power button and everything else that is on here, it has one of the better designs for batteries, and just lets you put in four AA batteries, which for competing systems was actually pretty good. This thing was actually really good on how much power it consumed. If you take things into consideration, it was actually probably one of the best, but it was the most limited in what it was putting out. I mean, you have an 8-bit system, it's monochromatic, it does various shades of gray until it starts to reach this like really weird green effect, which nobody really hated, but nobody really liked either. I personally hated the way the games looked on the Game Boy, but you couldn't help it. That was the design of the times. You could also hook it up to external power and everything, which was fun and fine for the most part. But what it really came down to was, like, you have four AA batteries. You brought an extra four because you're probably on a long car ride, and that's what's going to get you through this ride. And it wasn't bad. I remember many a road trip with just my Game Boy, and, I mean, rocking out, really. And you know what? Even when that red light comes on, you've got plenty of time. Like, let's be real. A lot of us out there have rocked our Game Boys with that red light flashing for days, hours, and you're just like, well, this is it until it dies. But then we've also all had that heartbreaking moment where, like, you're in the middle of an incredibly tense gym battle in Pokemon Red, and suddenly the system dies, and you're like, what do I do? What do I do? Ah! You start flipping out. But that's also another game that we'll bring up later, because the Game Boy allowed for some very cool things with Pokemon. So, with the Pokemon series of games, the original launch of Red and Blue, you have a game that was pitch perfect for handhelds. Let's be real. Pokemon is in its, I think, 7th generation now. Sun and Moon will be coming out later this month. For those that don't know, it is the 2nd of November here. And no, it's not the 2nd of November. What am I talking about? It's like the 5th. Jeez, I lost all my days. Went out to the field and I just got lost. It's the 6th of November. Holy crap. Yep, calendars. I need them. But so, like I said, Sun and Moon will be coming out later this month, and those games are pretty legit. Let's be real. Pokemon has gone a long way. It is not just a small old cult following. It is a worldwide phenomenon. It has been for decades, and that's fine because it's a legit good game. So Pokemon Red and Blue come out for the OG Game Boy. Everyone's like, oh, sweet. This is really cool. And then You find out that the reason why there are two different versions of the game is because you can trade. And the reason that you were able to do that is because the Game Boy had the link cable. So the link cable was actually a really cool design concept at the time that actually executed very well for a handful of games, not as well for others. So essentially, the link cable works just like any Wi-Fi connection works, in that you connect the two devices and then you can send things back and forth. So with your link cable connected, you could trade Pokemon back and forth and you could help fill out each other's Pokedex, which was amazing. But this required you to have two versions of the game. So respectively, red and blue. Of course, you could trade between red and red or blue to blue. It didn't really matter. Two Game Boys and the link cable. Now I'll tell you right now, I played a lot of Pokemon with my friends and I did a lot of trading. And I have actually filled out the original Pokedex of 151. And I'll tell you right now, it was awesome. It's a pretty rad feeling. You get that little certificate from Professor Oak. It's great. All right, so we'll talk about games more later. Right now, let's go back to talking about the hardware, right? So the Sega had a really... It's funny because when you read these numbers now, these don't seem like amazing numbers, but at the time, this was cutting-edge stuff. Oh, my coffee's cold. I'm talking like this was it. Like not the pinnacle, but a lot of this stuff was either like cutting-edge or right in the middle ground of powerful and affordable. So for the CPU, it had an 8-bit Sharp LR35902 core, which was running at a whopping 4.19 megahertz. Not gigahertz. You heard me right. Megahertz. All right. So it was similar to the Intel 8080, which came out at the time. And it, like I said, it wasn't as powerful as stuff that was in like the Game Gear, right? But it also wasn't sucking down 9 AA batteries in 30 minutes. So when you look at the performance plus the cost plus the power that it's putting out, that that Sharp CPU processor was actually pretty good. So it had 8 kilobytes of internal SRAM. Oh, man. Oh, 8 kilobytes. Oh, jeez. And then for video RAM, it had 8 kilobytes of internal RAM as well, which, hey, oh, boy. All right. That's awesome. That's, man. It's just so funny when you look at it because it's so basic in its design, but it did so much, so much. It was absolutely crazy. So this is what I thought was really cool here. So as someone that is into podcasting and likes things pertaining to audio and the art of audio crafting, I thought this was really cool. So for sound, it had two pulse wave generators, one PCM 4-bit wave sample, which did 64 4-bit samples played at 1x64 bank or a 2x32 bank channel, one noise generator, and one audio input for the cartridge. And so the unit only had one speaker, but headphones were provided in order to give you stereo sound. So like I said, everything came through mono on the actual console itself, on the handheld itself, but you plug in some headphones and then boom, you're in stereo. And then the display was a 160 by 144 pixel LCD. Frame rate was approximately around 59 frames per second on the regular Game Boy and 61 on the Super Game Boy. And the screen size was a whole whopping 2.6 inches diagonally, which I thought was hilarious. And then, yeah, then of course we have the color palette, which I despise but so many love, which is two bits, four shades of gray going from light to a very dark olive green, which I cannot stand that look at all. And yeah, it's 6 volts going off of 0.7 watts, which is 4 AA batteries, which provide about 15 to 30 hours of power. And dimensionally, this is the best part. One of the best parts, which is what makes this a killer design, is that the dimensionally, it was 90 millimeters by 100, that's wide, by 148 millimeters tall and 32 millimeters thick, I guess you'd say. So 3.5 by 5.8 by 1.3 inches. That's that's pretty small when you think about it. That can fit in your pocket. That's pretty freaking cool. So then over the years, there are a whole bunch of different iterations of the Game Boy, and this is where Nintendo starts to get their whole, like, color schemes and skins make things cool again mentality. So at the time, they had been going really good with the Nintendo, and then all of a sudden in March of 95, they decided to release the Play It Loud series of Game Boys, right? So the specs overall, like hardware components and everything, are exactly the same. They are OG Game Boys to the core, including how the screen looks, which I think is ridiculous. But it came in all kinds of crazy colors. So later on, they would come in, let's see here, we have red, green, yellow, black, white, blue, and clear, or transparent, or which, actually, oddly enough, is known as X-ray in the UK. So the most common ones are yellow, red, clear, and black. The green is one of those, like, unicorns that you're looking for. But the blue and the white are the rarest. The blue was a European and Japanese release only, which is rare. And the white was majority released in Japan. So it's one of those things where if you find a white, grab it. Now, this is the really cool one, which I've been meaning to tell my cousin about this. So a rare limited edition Manchester United Game Boy, which was red with the team's logo emblazoned on it, was released in the UK. Now, I'll tell you right now, if I could get my hands on one of those Man U Game Boys, I would buy it in a heartbeat. So cool. So then later on, we go down and Nintendo starts to streamline the form factor of the Game Boy. And then we get the Game Boy Pocket. So 96 saw the release of the Game Boy Pocket. And essentially, it was a smaller and lighter version of the OG Game Boy that actually required less power as well. Well, it didn't require less power, but it required less batteries to run. So it went from having to use 4 to 2 AA batteries, which is a huge, huge deal when you're looking at the cost of alkaline batteries. Alkaline batteries are not cheap now, and they definitely weren't cheap back in the day. So when you're looking at being able to essentially double your power consumption because you're going from using 4 batteries at once to 2 batteries at once, it's pretty awesome. Like, that is twice the playing power. But it wasn't actually, because it only gave you about 10 hours of gameplay. So it got streamlined down dimensionally. It went, it essentially slimmed up in a lot of ways, except for height. Like, they couldn't do much about the height. You know what I mean? You need that space in order for the buttons. You need good hand feel for where your hands sit, things like that. And the screen's got to fit, right? But when it came to the width and the girth, I guess you'd say, then they slimmed it down quite a bit. So let's see here. Oh, also it had a slightly better processor, which actually eliminated what they call ghosting, which is when you have like an after image of a sprite on screen. So where this is most noticeable in my experience was in the Ninja Turtles game for the Game Boy, where if you jumped, you'd have like just a split second of your character still being in the spot they were in while you were jumping. It got kind of, I mean, it got irritating, but it wasn't anything that would like stop you from playing. It was just one of those things that like was a limitation at the time and you couldn't do anything about. So, I mean, if we're being completely honest, the Game Boy is probably one of the most, man, what's the word I want to use? I don't want to say influential, but one of the most important proofs of concept, that's the word I was looking for, when it comes to gaming outside the home. Because the Game Boy proved that not only do people want to be able to play games on the go, but also that playing games on the go can be, one, affordable, two, just as enjoyable as the home console counterpart, and in some instances more. I mean, I've had a lot of really good experiences on handheld consoles. Not just a Game Boy. Like, I've had plenty of awesome gaming experiences on my PSP, my Vita, I mean, I have had a 3DS and a DS and Game Boy Advance and things along those lines. But it proved that you can have these awesome experiences outside of home consoles. And not just saying that, like, oh, it's something that isn't your console, but it's a gaming experience that doesn't have to be as comparatively powerful as your home console as well. I mean, to say that the PSP was as powerful as the PS2 or the PS3 is an insult to the PS2 and the PS3, but there were still a lot of really good games on it. Same thing for the Vita. The Vita was not as underpowered. There were some really good games on it, but there were still a lot of hardware limitations to that console. So the fact that you still have fun and still have a different, varied experience on a lesser powerful piece of hardware, you know, but while still on the go, says a lot for the design of the piece of hardware, but also of the games that go along with it. But we're talking about the Game Boy, not the Vita. So the Game Boy, again, proved that handheld gaming was not only viable, but in some instances, a more appealing option, and has led to some amazing game franchises. And when you look at Nintendo and you look at the Game Boy, from the Game Boy all the way to the new 3DS, their handheld lineup speaks for itself. It is a deep, deep bevy of games that go everywhere from Link's Awakening to Tetris to various Super Mario titles. There's so much, like the Animal Crossing series. I mean, now they have Monster Hunter. Monster Hunter was originally on the PSP, and then eventually went over to the DS. But there's so many games, like, just it's absolutely crazy, and a lot of those are just as enjoyable, if not more so, on that handheld console. A lot of people say that they want Pokemon on a console, and the thing is, I don't think you do. Like, yeah, maybe they have that option, the way that the Switch presents the option of being able to go back and forth between handheld and like big box console. Yeah, maybe like that. But as a like mainline Pokemon game, as a just strictly sit down on your couch and play this game title, I don't think that's what people really want. Like, people think they want that, the same way people think they want a zombie apocalypse, until there's zombies walking around, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh crap, this is real. It's not just shooting zombies in the head. Yeah, like, there's serious business to be had, but that's not the point. Anyway, you want Pokemon on a handheld because you want to be able to play that game in either long bouts where you can sit and play for an hour, 2 hours, whatever, or you're on the bus or in the car for 15 minutes and you're like, oh, well, I'm going to go and I'm going to get into a couple battles to tramp this Pokemon, or, oh man, I got a few minutes, maybe I can run through this gym, that kind of thing. If you're doing it at home, you know, sitting in front of this console and you're locked to that console, it takes away from that feeling of freedom that the game is designed to have around it. You know what I mean? You can play Pokemon anywhere, including your home, but you can play it at work at lunch, or you can play it on the train, or play it while you're in the air on an airplane. It doesn't matter. You have the freedom to play anywhere. And that's the appeal to a lot of handheld consoles, is you can play anywhere. And that's why I think that handheld consoles, while a lot of people think that the Switch is going to phase out the 3DS and the handheld line from Nintendo, I don't think that is the case. I don't. I mean, they're still going to release Pokemon Sun and Moon on the 3DS. Nintendo's already said they're not stopping production or support for their handheld line. So when people talk about merging the two game libraries, yes, there are games that would be really good on a console. Animal Crossing started on a home console and would still do good on a home console again. It did just as good, though, in the handheld space. Now, Monster Hunter is another thing where playing it on a handheld is really good, but that game could also benefit from a little bit more power on a sit-down console, but also to have that experience on that sit-down console. So I think that the Game Boy helps us to launch the concept of more freedom with playing games, and that's pretty damn important in my eyes. And that is going to do it for this lesson and for this episode of Binary Gamer. So thank you for listening to Binary Gamer. We are a weekly, by we I mean me, weekly show on homeofnerds.com. You can find the show anywhere that you can find podcasts: Stitcher, iTunes, Player FM, Google Play Music. If it hosts podcasts, we are on there. You can also find us over at homeofnerds.com, where you can go to get all your tips and tricks, news and reviews, anything you want to know about video games that I don't talk about, most likely they do. You can also find us over on youtube.com/homeofnerds. And like I said, you can send any comments, concerns, complaints, questions you want read on the show to podcast@homeofnerds.com, and I will read your question or comments or concerns on the show, and we will answer them together, and it will be awesome. And remember, Home of Nerds is going to be hosting our Extra Life stream on the 19th of November, starting at 8 a.m. sharp, Central Standard Time, not Eastern, Central Standard Time, over on twitch.tv/homeofnerds, and you can also go to extralife.org/homeofnerds to donate. Our goal is 10K. If we don't hit 10K, that's all right. I mean, whatever we can get to go to the kids to help out for a good cause, that's what's important. But like I said, our goal is 10K. If we get $50, you know what? That's $50 that East Tennessee Children's Hospital didn't have. And you know what? That's fine with me. So that is going to do it. Thank you very much for listening. Have a good day. Have a nice night. Class dismissed.
I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans, America's premier home purchase lender. We've created a new way to protect you from unpredictable interest rates. Our exclusive Rate Shield approval. First, we lock your interest rate for up to 90 days. Then, if rates go up, your rate stays locked. But if rates go down, your rate drops. Either way, you win. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year fixed-rate loans. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. License in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply.